Crawford back in there, and they drop the puck. Sharp will feed it in front. Stolberg tips it wide. 5 seconds. Sharp centers it. Knocked away by Raz. Puck loose. Bergeron looking to clear. Kelly pushes it to the corner, and that's it. The Bruins with a 2-0 win in Game 3, and they lead the Stanley Cup Final 2-1.
Talking the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. The Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Might be an overstatement to say pure dominance from the Boston Bruins, but when it comes to two teams that are as good as these ones, it's about as close as you're going to come. The Bruins take a 2-0 win over the Chicago Blackhawks in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final last night, and that's kind of where we'll kick things off as we welcome you into the Big Show on a Tuesday afternoon. Yeah, maybe pure dominance is pushing it, but that's as good as it gets from the Boston Bruins, and that's what we know they're capable of each and every time they go out there. Really, I mean, that once again looked like the team that was able to get all the way to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final and eventually win the Cup in 2011. That looked like the team that was so good to start the regular season, and that looks like a team that is going to push this thing deep at the very least now with a 2-1 series lead on the Blackhawks in the Cup Final. A few things on the game last night as we welcome you in. I mean, first of all, when talking about the Bruins, nothing surprised me in the way they played yesterday. Nothing. Because if you take a look at maybe a couple of games in the Toronto series and maybe a bad stretch at, you know, for a month, month and a half in the regular season, you know, by and large, the Bruins have been a pretty damn good team all year long. And even if you go back to last year, as they go out in triple overtime to the Washington Capitals in round one, that was a really good team too. And we saw that team play like that by and large. They got good goaltending. They were able to stifle things. I know that Tuukka Rask ends up making 28 stops for the shutout, but quite honestly, it's not as if we were talking about a ton of grade A scoring opportunities from the Chicago Blackhawks, and when it's all said and done, 28 shots may be a little deceiving. I thought that Boston did a really good job of choking things off, maybe a little more than the shots would say. So, knowing that, not surprising whatsoever, because in terms of keeping things to the outside and in terms of making it so there's not a ton of quality opportunities, Boston's as good as they come defensively in this league. So nothing surprised me in what Boston did yesterday. The power play is able to score a goal. It's a timely one. Comes late in the second period from Patrice Bergeron. And really, once that power play goal was scored, you kind of had an LA Kings feel to it. Going back to last year when they won the Stanley Cup, once it was 2-0, you kind of had the feeling that the Bruins were going to be able to choke this thing off, and that they've got their power play goal, they've got their 2-goal lead, and it is going to be extremely difficult sledding for Chicago to come back. They were able to erase a 2-goal lead twice in Game 1 en route to a victory, but you just didn't get that feeling on the road in Boston's building last night, and I thought the Bruins did a really good job of making sure that didn't happen. And then the final thing, as Tuukka Rask picks up the shutout and continues his really, really good run throughout the postseason, and maybe really good run is a little bit of an understatement, but in seeing him do that, and in seeing him put up the 28-stop shutout last night, it raises the question once again: how quickly does a contract get kind of consummated between the Bruins and Rask? How quickly does it take once the Stanley Cup Final is done for this to come to fruition? Because he is up for a new contract for next year. He signed a 1-year contract prior to this year. So that's question number one. And then question number two is, how long and how much are we talking about? I mean, here's a guy who has been very highly touted for a long time and has shown glimpses of being that guy, but this is the first year that he was bona fide the number one guy. You look back 3 years ago, I know that he was the goalie of record when Philadelphia came back on Boston and erased them in 7 games after the Bruins had a 3-0 lead. I know that. He's played playoff games before and all of that. But now, starting the season and being a bona fide number one, he's answered the bell and done so well. Did it in the regular season with strong, not spectacular, but strong numbers, and then his performance in the postseason has exceeded that. We're talking $4 million plus at the very least for Rask. I think we're talking about a 4-5 year contract for the guy. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and it's the right way to go because the guy is proven that, yeah, he is a number one goalie. He's confident. They like him. We're talking about big money. I mean, are we talking about Marc-Andre Fleury money? Maybe. You know, maybe we are talking about a deal that gets that high. I mean, at the very least, we're talking $4 million per for a guy like Tuukka Rask, and good on him. He's had himself a really good postseason. Welcome to the Big Show on a Tuesday afternoon. Pat Steinberg along with you as we got plenty coming up this hour. Two big re-signings in the NHL, and they kind of raise different questions. About, what does the one in Detroit mean? And why only 5 years for the one in San Jose? Pavel Datsyuk and Logan Couture have both been re-upped by the Wings and Sharks, respectively. More NHL draft talk in just a few minutes with another prospect and some significant news items to sink our teeth into in the Canadian Football League. All that before we get to 2 o'clock and Mr. Kerr joins the program. Speaking of NHL news, the Calgary Flames making some news today, and this is not surprising. Came out following the program yesterday that Bob Stauffer and Edmonton at 6:30 Ched kind of put out there that expect the Flames to go after Corbin Knight of the Florida Panthers organization and try and trade for his rights. They have done exactly that this morning, trading for him in exchange for a fourth-round pick in the 2013 NHL draft. Who is Corbin Knight, you ask? Well, here is a gentleman who was drafted back in the 2009 NHL draft by the Florida Panthers in the fifth round. So why are the Flames trading for his rights? Why hasn't he been signed? What's the deal with this whole thing? Plain and simple, we're talking about the Justin Schultz rule being put into effect. What is the Justin Schultz rule? Well, a loophole was found in the last CBA that allows college players to become unrestricted free agents if they do one thing. If they play 4 years, doesn't have to be in college. It can either be in a junior A league here in Canada or the USHL in the States, and obviously play their college years as well. But from 4 years from when they were drafted, that offseason 4 years later, if they haven't signed, they will become an unrestricted free agent. That's exactly what happened when Anaheim drafted Justin Schultz in 2008. He played in Kelowna. Then he went and played at Wisconsin in the NCAA 4 years past, and he became an unrestricted free agent. Oilers won him in a sweepstakes. The only difference here is that the Flames are getting ahead of the group and bringing him into the fold and having exclusive negotiating rights before August 15th when the loophole would kick in on Corbin Knight. Had 49 points in 41 games with the University of North Dakota last year, his senior year there. He was a top 10 finalist for the Hobie Baker Award, along with Johnny Gaudreau, already in the Flames organization. Cool thing here is that he's got a ton of Southern Alberta ties. Born in High River, played one full season of junior A hockey with the Okotoks Oilers organization before he went off to the University of North Dakota. The quote from Jay Feaster says, "Corbin Knight is a player our scouts have been watching closely throughout his collegiate career. When Florida did not sign Corbin this spring, we contacted them and asked for permission to speak with him. Florida granted teams, including ours, that opportunity on the condition that we were prepared to trade for his rights. During the past 10 days, we spoke with Corbin and his agent and were pleased to learn Corbin wanted to start his pro career in Calgary. We were able to consummate the trade today with Florida and are confident we will get Corbin signed when permitted in July. We are thrilled to add him to our organization and look forward to his debut in a Flames sweater this fall," unquote. I think they've already got him to a contract. I mean, I think it's that they've agreed to a deal in principle. That would be my guess. Very similar to the Kari Ramos situation. They can't sign him until July 5th officially, but I think they've probably come to terms and have that all figured out. And once we get to the free agent period opening, they'll be able to do so. So I do think that we're going to see him in the fold. And that's why I look at it and say, you know, I'm not really all that broken up about the fourth-round pick. I know that he's originally a fifth-round pick, but I think that what he's done in the NCAA has exceeded the expectations that maybe Florida had on him. Didn't want to sign in Florida. He had that right as a player in college. All college players do if you wait that 4 years. And Corbin decided that he was going to become an unrestricted free agent or not sign with Florida, and now Calgary has got that exclusive negotiating rights. Those rights start on July 5th. They go between July 5th and August 15th. But again, I think they've already got a deal in principle worked out with the guy, and I think it's a good move. The main reason why, we talked to Robbie yesterday, and he used the term, you got to go on that Costco shopping trip to kind of fill up your prospect cupboards. And specifically in that 20 to 25 age range, Flames are pretty bare there. And this fills that right away. He's 22 years old. He's done good work in college. He's a center iceman. He's not projecting to be the next number one center on this team or anything like that. But It's another player that helps fill that 20 to 25 age range, and he's one of the more highly touted guys coming out of college. So I like the deal. The Flames now have 7 picks at the 2013 NHL draft in New Jersey. We'll get a little bit more into Corbin Knight a little bit later on, but I like the deal, and I think that they've gone out and at the very least addressed another need. Whether or not it works out, we don't know, but I think fourth round, there are a couple of people who said that's really high, that's a bad price. I don't see it because I think they have them signed and have them agreed to a deal in principle, and we'll find that out here in the next month or so. Pat Steinberg along with you on the Big Show as we continue preparing for the 2013 NHL Draft. It comes up at the end of the month. We're about a week and a half away from it, and we're continuing to talk to some of the top prospects in the Western Hockey League heading into the 2013 NHL Draft, and that's what we're doing right now. Let's go down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Tank Hotline and talk to a gentleman who just finished his second season with the Vancouver Giants. He played in 69 games, putting up 23 goals and 57 points. And 18-year-old Jackson Houck is on the line with us right now. Jackson, how are you, man? Thanks for doing this.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I guess you're a week and a half from a big day in your hockey career. How are you feeling ahead of the 2013 NHL draft?
I could be more excited. Leading before the combine, you get a little nervous leading up to the combine because you don't know what to expect there. But, after the combine, it's a big sigh of relief because there's nothing you can really do to other than wait. So right now I'm just really excited.
So is it nerves or is it just excitement for you?
A little bit of both. I'd say more excitement than nerves. Just really more excitement than anything.
Okay, so tell me about the combine experience. I know there's the physical testing, but there's a whole lot more that goes into that too.
Yeah. I flew in there Wednesday, and then I think all Thursday I had all my interviews there, and it takes a lot mentally to prepare for all the questions they're going to ask you. Physical testing is a part of it before it, but definitely the mental part is something you got to really work for. Kind of practice a little bit. But in a sense, you got to be comfortable talking to people, just be yourself and be honest, really.
So, how do you prep for the interview process?
I don't know. I'm just kind of comfortable. Comfortable talking to people is where I'm used to doing things, but to prepare, you kind of, like my agent gave me a booklet on some of the questions they've heard in the past, so just to look that over helped a little bit.
Did you get any bizarre questions that you weren't prepared for?
Yeah, I guess one was in there. I think Boston asked what your favorite animal was, and I didn't say a bear there, so I think I dropped the ball a little bit there.
yeah, I guess so. Jackson Houck, the Vancouver Giants, joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. So the time between your season ending with the Giants and the 2013 NHL draft, you had the combine in there, but what else has gone into your preparations?
I've just been training and power skating a lot. Before the combine, I knew my skating was something I really needed to work on, so I attacked that right away just a week or two after the season ended, so I've been doing power skating. Start your summer diet, and then training 4 times a week. So anything you can do to get better before the season starts is huge.
Is this training regimen this summer any different than what you've done in summers past?
Yeah, I mean, last season, I amped my training up a little bit, but this year I've really taken it into a really big part because even going to the combine, seeing what type of shape other guys are in. Sees where you're at and see how hard you really have to work.
Right. And are you heading to the draft or are you staying in North Vancouver?
I'm probably going to stay in North Van, have some family and friends over and probably just watch the draft on TV and then hopefully get a call or something like that in a couple rounds there. So just wait for that call.
Okay, so you're not going to try and keep yourself busy and try and forget about it? You're going to sit down and watch it?
I might go play golf, something like that, but I think later, like after the first round or something like that, I might come home and then just really wait there. But I might go golfing the morning of, just to try and clear my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it might not be a bad idea. Jackson Houck's with us of the Vancouver Giants, joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Tank Hotline, one of the top draft-eligible prospects coming up for the 2013 draft at the end of the month. I guess the overall season for your team in Vancouver, I know it was a tough year for the team. How do you look back on the 2012-2013 campaign?
Definitely not happy with the outcome of the season, but I think towards the end, I think we really started to gel together. I think we won like 8 of our last 12 or something like that. So I think we're excited for next season. I think a lot of the guys know that we have a lot of work to do. So we've had a long off season, trained for that. And then we definitely don't want to go through what we did this year because it was a tough season. And I definitely don't want to go through that again.
But you think the pieces are in place for a much better year next year?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants always do a great job of bringing in some talent. They know they've drafted well. They've done a great job of producing, NHL guys. You look at Lucic, Boma, Gallagher. And, you know, they do a great job there. So, I'm looking forward to the season.
And, obviously, you get to play at home. What's just how much of a benefit is it that you're playing for your hometown team in the Dub?
It's huge. I mean, you get to see your family and friends more often than not. You know, you look at guys, they can't wait to family to come in. They call them every day. But me, I'm just over the bridge, and then I'm right home. So, I mean, it's huge. You get to see your family and friends, which is a big boost for me.
It is Jackson Houck of the Vancouver Giants joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. I wonder about your year. 57 points in 69 games. How do you look back at your season individually?
Well, I didn't think I started that well, to be honest. I had a lot of assists early on. I wasn't putting the puck in the net, which was kind of disappointing. But right at Christmas, I turned it around, and definitely getting a letter really helped. They have that trust in me and that young core group to lead us to another where the Giants used to be. So, I mean, it's huge for me. 7 points, that was better than my expectations. So, I'm looking forward to be a real threat down the season there.
Well, you're 18 years old right now. How do you kind of view the whole idea of being a leader?
It's not difficult for me. You know, I've always been an assistant captain or something like that on the teams I've been in before. But definitely in the Western League, being an assistant at such a young age, it was different for me at first. But like once I got in, I mean, the way I lead on the ice is how I mostly got it. And being a younger group, I think in different situations I might have not got the A until later in my career. But just because a young group, I think, got me the A, and I think I thrived with it.
So you would consider yourself more of a lead by example type guy?
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak up when it's necessary, but mostly on ice is how I'll lead.
And I have to ask you about the change from one season to the next. I mean, you went from 20 points to 57. I mean, did you feel like from your 17 to your 18-year-old year or your first year to your second year that things were a whole lot better off for you?
Oh, in my 16-year-old year, I had a role, which was just an energy guy, not get scored on, try and gain Don's trust. And I think as my 17-year-old year this year, Don trusted me. He put me out in key situations, which really helped my confidence. Definitely with Gallagher and a lot of guys moving on and the way our team was going, I got a lot more ice time. And I think going from 20 to 57 is just the confidence of playing more, getting used to the league, keeping up to the speed that the guys and the other teams have. So I think for me, it was keeping up to the speed and gaining that confidence to really be able to play at that level.
Well, and knowing your age, you've got the 3 years left of WHL eligibility and the two real years left of your 18 and 19-year-old season. Just how much more growth do you think you've got to do?
I think there's tons. There's always room to improve. I mean, there's still skating, there's strength. I mean, only being 17, only being 18 is, my body still needs to develop. Put some good weight on, fill out a bit more. So there's tons of room to develop.
Okay, so describe yourself as a player. If you're to say, okay, Jackson Houck of the Vancouver Giants, and somebody in one of those interviews say, what type of player are you? How do you answer that question?
Well, I'd say I'm definitely a two-way player, good in both all three zones of the ice. I think, I'll play physical. I'll provide, energy for the guys. I'll agitate some guys. But I think I can chip in some big goals. But also I can, separate my man from the puck and also try my teammates open. So I'm mostly just a two-way guy.
Well, and I really appreciate you taking some time out with us this afternoon. I know you just finished training about 20 minutes ago, so you're probably still a little bagged from that. So appreciate you doing this, man, and good luck. It's coming up on us in a week and a half, so I'm sure things are pretty exciting for you right now. We'll see you down there. I guess we'll hear from you down there in New Jersey, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, no problem. There's Jackson Houck of the Vancouver Giants joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. So here's a guy who, in his 17-year-old season, put up 57 points in 69 games with the Vancouver Giants and now goes into the 2013 NHL draft. Is a guy, you know, is he a guy that falls into the third or fourth round, maybe? Is he a guy and goes a little higher up than that? Yeah. I mean, we had J.C. LaPonne on yesterday from the Kamloops Blazers. He's that overager guy. I mean, he's in his second year of draft eligibility. Well, this is year one for Jackson Houck. And as a 17-year-old on a bad team, and not to say that in a derogatory sense, but look, the Vancouver Giants were a struggling team last year. They were in the year one of a real rebuilding phase, and the Giants are kind of like the Calgary Hitmen. I mean, that's a team that has had nothing but success for the most part over the last decade or so. And so eventually, in a cyclical league like the Western Hockey League, you're going to have that down year. It was a couple of years ago the Hitmen had their down year, and now this year it was Vancouver's turn, and yet here's a guy that they already have a letter on him, and here's a guy that put up 57 points. There's some interesting things in his future. We'll see where he ends up going at the 2013 NHL Draft. Thanks to Jeff of the Western Hockey League for setting that up. We'll continue talking to some Western Hockey League kids throughout the week prior to the 2013 NHL Draft, which we are all over at Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Four sponsors for you as our coverage starts next Thursday from New Jersey and New York. Varsity Chrysler is one of them. This June, Varsity's red hot, and they're clearing the lot with sizzling savings on all new cars and trucks. Varsity Chrysler, McKnight, west of Deerfoot, across from Golden Acres, where everybody rides. Also, Pete the Plumber, Shaganappy Insurance Services LTD, and Bluegrass Nursery, Sod, and Garden Center. Looking forward to being down there for the 2013 NHL Draft. Take a break. When we come back, big money in Detroit, big money in San Jose. Some interesting questions, though, posed when it comes to two contract extensions. Next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show continues, brought to you by The Comedy Cave. The best comedy for the cheapest price, only $10. Visit ComedyCave.com for daily specials and showtimes. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
In studio today, welcome back. Pat Steinberg along with you. Rob Kerr joins in at the top of the hour. Tomorrow we'll be live at our old friendly confines at the Hot Stove Lounge. Good reason for it. Tell you about it later, but we got a special guest coming in, tell some stories between 3 and 4 tomorrow afternoon. Really looking forward to our guest. That's what we call a radio tease. I won't tell you just yet. We got a special guest in between 3 and 4 tomorrow here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Still lots more to come on Calgary's acquisition of Corbin Knight. I mean, are we talking about a groundbreaking acquisition? No, but we are talking about a pretty impressive final year at the University of North Dakota, and one of those guys who was going to be pretty sought after, similar to Danny DeKeyser or Justin Schultz or other guys like that, and Corbin Knight, who is scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent come August 15th because the Justin Schultz rule applies to him. He was drafted in 2009. Here we are, summer of 13, 4 years since his draft date. He is not signed, which means he can become an unrestricted free agent in mid-August, but the Flames trade a fourth-round pick to the Panthers, and they acquire his exclusive negotiating rights. And so starting on July 5th, they'll be able to negotiate, although my gut feeling would be there's already a deal in principle agreed to, and we'll get more into that as the afternoon goes along. Detroit Red Wings have accomplished their number one goal of the offseason by agreeing to a new deal with Pavel Datsyuk. They signed him to a three-year contract extension today worth $22.5 million, 2 days before his 35th birthday, to keep the Russian superstar with the franchise through 2016-2017. A couple of questions come to mind on this signing. The Sharks also make a big splash in free agency today. But on the Pavel Datsyuk front, here's a guy who turns 35 in a couple of days, and a guy that when this contract goes into action, because he has one more year left on his current deal, he'll be 36 years of age. So 36, 37, and 38 will be the start dates to the three seasons under this new contract. We know this guy plays a brand of hockey that, you know, maybe isn't all that physically demanding. He plays a brand of hockey that, when I say physically demanding, I don't mean it again in a derogatory sense. He's just so smart, so gifted, and so skilled that, you know, he doesn't get into a lot of physical altercations. It's tough to pin him on the boards. It's tough to pin him down. And so I heard a lot of people on Twitter, and I've read a number of things kind of questioning whether or not this is a good deal, questioning whether or not this is something the Red Wings are smart to do. The only reason I'll hold short at that is because of the way he plays, and because the number one thing that allows Datsyuk to have the success that he's had is the way he sees the game. And that doesn't change if you're 37 to 38. It doesn't change as you grow older. You're always going to be able to think the game at the level you think it at, and he thinks it as at as high a level as anybody who's ever played it. I mean, the guy is as smart a hockey player who has ever played in this league before. So because of that, yeah, I'm pretty confident that he'll still be a pretty effective player even into the final year of his contract. Is he going to be a point-per-game guy? Maybe not, because hands, speed, that stuff is what all goes away. But just the pure ability to read the game and the ability to think the game at the level he does, I think he'll be fine. So the Red Wings will... Yeah, he had 49 points in 48 games this year. Had 9 points in the postseason. Kind of tailed off as we got into the second round and the Red Wings went out in 7 games to the Chicago Blackhawks. But man, was he good in round 1 against the Anaheim Ducks. And again, here's a 35-year-old guy or 34-year-old guy turning 35. Yeah, sometimes that's going to happen. Sometimes you're going to see the level of play tail off as you go a little deeper into the season, even though it was only 48 games. So yeah, he's not as effective now as he was 3 or 4 years ago. He is still one smart hockey player, so I don't really have a big problem with it. The only thing that I ask is, you know, there was this rumor out there, oh, he's for sure, this is for sure his final year in the NHL. He's going to the KHL after his contract. That rumor seems to be as unfounded as they get. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to the Continental Hockey League, and yet here he is signing a 3-year extension with the Detroit Red Wings. Just sometimes these rumors take on a life of their own, and it's another cautionary tale to not believe everything that is reported as incontrovertible fact. I know that he talked about it and all that type of thing, but again, it was reported as if, oh no, I mean, he's done. This is his final year. Next year's the farewell tour. Well, apparently not. He said all along he wanted to stay in Detroit. He said all along that he would like to sign a new deal with the Red Wings, and yet here he is, and he's done just that. So, again, don't always buy wholly into everything you hear being thrown around in the rumor mill and in the Twitterverse. The San Jose Sharks have agreed to a 5-year, $30 million extension with Logan Couture, $6 million on the annual average value. The 24-year-old's been the Sharks' top goal scorer the past 2 years. 48 games this year, 21 goals and 16 assists. And here's a guy that has really turned into the torchbearer of the Sharks. He and Joe Pavelski are the two horses driving this team up front going forward. And while Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau are still very good players, I think the torch passing has been accomplished. And, you know, that's why I'm glad that Todd McClellan has not been fired. That's why I'm glad that the head coach of the team is sticking around, because I really feel, even though they went out in 7 games to the LA Kings, I really feel that what happened this year, they turned a corner, because they battled the adversity they did in the middle part, the middle, I guess if you take a look at their regular season as a sandwich, they had 2 good pieces of bread and a bad middle. And then in the postseason, they really came alive. And down the stretch in the regular season, they really started to come into their own. And I think a big part of that is the fact that the players that'll be the new core members and the new leading group really came to the forefront. I think you saw that on the blue line with Marc-Edouard Vlasic, and you certainly saw that up front with Joe Pavelski and Logan Couture, and that continued into the postseason. And that passing of the torch, and yet the continued effectiveness of guys like Marleau and Thornton and Boyle, to me, that was important to see. Niemi had the good year in net. He's a Vezina Trophy finalist, all that type of thing. They needed to get Couture signed. He's under contract for next year. His deal kicks in and the 2014-2015 season as well. The question that I have, only 5 years. Here's a guy who would seem like an automatic candidate for the max on an 8-year deal. Getzlaf got it, and Perry got it, and Travis Zajac got it with the New Jersey Devils. This guy seemed like an automatic 8-year guy. Why only 5 years? Well, my best guess is this is kind of a bridge for both guys, or for both sides. The Sharks want him long-term, and I'm sure San Jose would have loved to get him under contract for 8 years. But if you're Logan Couture, yeah, you want to stay long-term. You think that there's something going on, but you also want to prime yourself and get yourself ready for unrestricted free agency and still have a shot at that massive contract one more time. As an independent contractor, 5 years makes sense for him and still ends up giving the Sharks pretty close to what they want. So it's not the 8-year deal, but if you're asking me why 5 years, well, this takes him to 29, gets him right in his prime years when it comes to unrestricted free agency. Doesn't mean he won't leave, but it gives him that opportunity to crack that big payday. And from an agent's perspective, from an independent contractor perspective, as Couture is as a player and as all guys are in this league, I think it makes sense, and I can't say I would do much different. So a 5-year, $30 million deal for Logan Couture. Let's see how he continues to progress in his NHL career. Already a pretty good progression at the age of 24. Pat Steinberg along with you on the Big Show this afternoon. We're going to hear from Ansar Khan of MLive.com in Detroit to go a little deeper into the Pavel Datsyuk signing in just a few minutes here on the program. And he was the man who first broke this deal last night. The Red Wings were close to a deal with Datsyuk and a contract extension, and today announced a 3-year extension can officially be signed until July 5th. In the CFL, the Calgary Stampeders making an interesting move today. Not a surprising move whatsoever. We had heard about this over the weekend. I believe the Calgary Sun was the first one to put this out there, that the Stampeders were close to coming to terms with import defensive back Jonathan Hefny. John Huffnagel joined the morning show this morning with Lubo and Boomer and basically said as much. Didn't confirm it, but Boomer asked him and he said, there's a good chance that he'll be on the field today. He was on the field today for the Stampeders, and a 3-year deal for Jonathan Hefny, who was released by the Bombers on Saturday. He had played 3 full seasons and part of a 4th with Winnipeg and was the most outstanding rookie in 2009. He's an all-star twice. He started all 18 games for the Bombers last year, played both at half and as the strong side linebacker, led the team with 74 tackles. Was nowhere near as good last year as he was the year before with the Swaggerville defense in Winnipeg, but still had himself a pretty decent year. The guy who really suffered, I thought, last year with the everything in Winnipeg went from really good to really bad from one year to the next. But I thought it was Jovan Johnson who really struggled at the DB position for Winnipeg last year. Hefny wasn't as effective as he was the year before, and nobody really was for the Bombers, but I still thought that he was okay. And so, you know, I think that he's still a pretty effective player and still a guy that you can plug in and put on that Calgary Stampeders secondary, and you know exactly what he's going to get. The one thing that a lot of people have asked is, okay, so why was he released in Winnipeg? The guy can still play. The guy is still good enough to be a starter with the Bombers. The Bombers say it was performance-related. I still don't buy it. Just prior to training camp, Hefny was charged with marijuana possession in his home state of South Carolina, and that wasn't as much of the deal. It was more the fact that he didn't inform the Bombers about it, and he had known about it for a little while, didn't tell the Bombers, and it kind of caught them completely off guard. They say that has nothing to do with the release. I don't buy it. I think absolutely it had something to do with the release, but he's getting a fresh start with the Stampeders. And again, in the Canadian Football League, you don't have guaranteed contracts, so you bring him in, and if he ends up being a problem player, then you release him, and it's easy. The interactions I've had with him, seems like a good guy. Talked to a lot of people in the league. They say that, hey, you know what, he made a mistake and doesn't feel good about the mistake, but he's still a guy who can play. He's still a guy who wants to contribute and be a good teammate. So let's see how it works out. I'm not going to sit here and condemn the guy for a little bit of a mistake south of the border. Yeah, it's something that he shouldn't have done and certainly probably should have informed his team about it, but all in all, I think football wins out. You've got an opportunity to sign a really good player and a guy who can still help your secondary. And the Stampeders secondary at half, and you know, ever since they moved Keon Raymond more to the linebacker position, you know, that the halfback position, they could use a little improvement there. Not to say it's bad, but you throw him into that mix. I think that he can still be a pretty good contributor. And the secondary was good last year, but it wasn't their main strong suit. And to add another player who you know can play, no problem with it. And I think the Stampeders have shown that they can integrate all kinds of personalities and still have success. And I like the signing. I think that it's the right move. And had it been any other team, I probably would have said the same thing. Riders or Lions, just happens to be the Calgary Stampeders. And man, oh man, do I feel bad for Matt Nichols, the quarterback of the Edmonton Eskimos. Here's a guy who had his first real opportunity to be a pro starter at the beginning of the year. He and Mike Riley, who the Eskimos acquired from the BC Lions, were going to be next neck and neck, and Cavis Reed, the head coach of the Eskimos, said these guys are going to battle it out mano a mano throughout training camp, and we're not naming a starting quarterback until the end of camp and until we're ready for the regular season. We're going to let these guys go head-to-head as long as humanly possible. That was the best possible scenario for the Eskimos. They blew their trade with Ricky Ray. They screwed up their organization by doing so. He goes and wins a Grey Cup with Toronto. Eric Tillman botches the whole thing. They don't have a quarterback who can play more than one or two games in succession, being effective last year. I mean, Kerry Joseph was okay, but couldn't get the job done on a regular basis because the guy is near the end of his career. And it didn't work with Giles. And overall, they just did not have a starting quarterback last year. And so this year, as they are starting to build once again, they went about it the right way. They brought in a guy from BC who could potentially be a number one, and they kept a guy who we saw last year who could be potentially a number one in Matt Nichols. And then Nichols has that gruesome injury in the East Division semifinal against Toronto, screws up his entire summer or winter training, screws up the entire thing for him, but he's able to come back and be part of training camp, and then in the first preseason game, he tears his ACL against the Riders. He is going to undergo surgery and is done for the season. He threw a pick, was trying to make a tackle, tore up his ACL, and you just feel bad for the guy because it's nothing but bad luck. Awful injury in the East Division semi, and another really bad one here. And this one is really going to put his career progression at a stunt and is certainly going to put it in jeopardy. Mike Riley will be the starting quarterback. I know that a lot of stories are saying he's got the inside track. Let's be honest. Mike Riley's going to start the first game of the season for the Eskimos. But the biggest thing here, as bad as I feel for Matt Nichols, I feel just as bad for the Eskimos because they needed this to work out. They needed, or they didn't need it, but they could have been helped out, could have been such a big thing for them to have these guys push each other throughout training camp to make sure that there was always going to be that competition, to have both guys playing at the top of their game. And so you know what? If Riley wins the job, and I thought Riley would win the job coming out of training camp, if he wins it, then you know that he was pushed by Nichols. And if Riley gets hurt or his play goes the other way, then you know that Nichols has been pushing because he believes that he's got a shot. Well, now that can't happen. I feel bad for Matt Nichols. I feel bad for the Eskimos. Eric Tillman's no longer there, so the Eskimos aren't really to blame for that deal anymore. Eric Tillman is. They don't have a quarterback because of it, or they didn't last year. I think Mike Riley's going to do fine. I just think that it would have been better had they been able to have Nichols and Riley fighting it out and competing against one another as that number one position really gets solidified for the Eskimos. We'll take a break as we continue on hour one of the Big Show continues next with a big deal in Detroit. Pavel Datsyuk not going anywhere. He signs a 3-year extension, and he's got himself $7.5 million per year kicking in for the 2014-2015 season. We'll check in Detroit next at the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
There's Datsyuk across the Anaheim line. Fire the puck. Oh. He scores! I believe that hit the water bottle under the crossbar. What a shot by Datsyuk. We're going to look at this when it appears the Red Wings have tied the game at 2.
Talking hockey in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pavel Datsyuk's game 6 goal against the Anaheim Ducks tied it at 2. The Red Wings would eventually win it in overtime. One of the biggest goals Datsyuk scored all season. And he's not done scoring goals with the Detroit Red Wings yet. He signs himself a new 3-year, $22.5 million contract extension with the Red Wings today. Can officially be signed until July 5th when free agency opens. But after all those rumors of him going to the Continental Hockey League, he's not going anywhere. Pavel Datsyuk staying in the Motor City. And we go down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take hotline right now and welcome in the gentleman who broke this story late last night. That's Ansar Khan of MLive.com. Ansar, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Just your overall impressions of the deal for Pavel Datsyuk, $7.5 million on an average annual value starting the year after next.
A great deal for the Red Wings. I mean, obviously, he's the cornerstone of this team, a guy that they couldn't do without. It would be hard to imagine what kind of shape this team would be like without this guy. He's just so important. He does so many things for this team at both ends of the ice, in all situations. I mean, he's their best face-off guy, Selke Award finalist every year. He was their leading scorer this year, and he's just a magician with the puck. So they're very happy today in the Red Wings offices. As you can imagine, that they don't have to worry about it for the next 4 years. He'll be a Red Wing.
Now, and we'll get the KHL link out of the way right now. It seemed like a foregone conclusion to some that this coming year, the final year of his current contract, was going to be the farewell tour for Datsyuk in Detroit, and he was going to go finish his career in Russia after this. And then it came out a couple of weeks ago that, well, maybe that's not so much the case. How much of an actual possibility was this being the final year of his contract, or was that all fabrication?
I won't say it's fabrication. I mean, it was always a possibility, given the fact that he had stated he enjoyed himself playing there the first half of this season during the lockout, and obviously it's where he's from, it's where his family's at. When he came back, when the lockout ended, he stated that he'd like to finish his career one day in Russia, but you know, he left it open. He didn't say exactly when that was going to be. And that kind of was what led to the rumors kind of festering and picking up steam. But he indicated right after the season, after the playoff loss to Chicago, that this is where he wants to be. He wants to want an extension with the Red Wings. And he said he never seriously considered Russia as an option at this time. And, of course, Wings were relieved to hear that. And it didn't take, once he stated his desire that he wanted to be here, it didn't take long for them to work out an extension.
Ansar Khan's with us, MLive.com in Detroit, down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Can you go into the relationship that Datsyuk has, not only with the Red Wings organization, but overall with the city of Detroit?
It's different probably than a lot of star athletes simply because of the language barrier. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, and the interviews that he does, it's sometimes hard to understand exactly everything that he's saying because he's not as fluent in English. At least he's not to the media anyway. But his sense of humor certainly comes out. He's got a tremendous sense of humor. He jokes a lot, smiles a lot, and from a fan standpoint, it's just they just love watching him play. I mean, he just brings fans out of their seats with the things that he does with the puck, the wizardry. His hands are so quick they've never really seen anything like it around here, that the things that he can do with a puck, and that's really one of the main things that's endeared him to Red Wings fans, and what brings fans out to see him, in addition to his puck handling ability, just the overall game. When you add that to it, excelling at both ends of the ice, I mean, you've got of course one of the premier players in the league.
He played this past season as a 34-year-old, had 49 points in 48 games, and 9 more points in the postseason. How would you look back at this shortened campaign for Datsyuk?
Good. He was, I would say Jimmy Howard certainly was their most valuable player night in and night out. He was the key guy. I mean, the one guy that they could not afford to lose was Jimmy Howard. But beyond that, Datsyuk was their best player, both offensively and defensively. The most consistent player right from the start. And I think, having played in Russia the first half of the season certainly helped, whereas we've seen a lot of the guys that didn't play anywhere for a few months during the lockout had struggled making the adjustment once the season started. But I think Datsyuk was a goal right from the start, and it was a fairly consistent season.
He'll be 36, 37, and 38 on the 3 years of this contract extension. Knowing what you know about him, knowing that you've watched him every game for the last number of years, what are the chances in your mind of him still being at a pretty high level into the latter stages of this extension?
I think he'll. I think he'll still be at a good level into his late 30s. He's tremendous conditioning. I mean, he's a hard worker on and off the ice, and he just does so many things that there's so many elements of his game where he might lose a little bit offensively, but he'll pick it up defensively. And you know, as long as he has those hands, those tremendous hands, I think he'll continue to flourish. And he's with a team here that's had a lot of success going back through the years with older players for whatever reason. I mean, mm-hmm. they, players like Lidstrom and Chris Chelios and Igor Larionov just excelled, continued to excel well into their 30s. Late 30s, and I suspect Datsyuk will be the same.
And final question for you. Datsyuk was under contract for this year, so it wasn't a pressing need for the upcoming year, but Valtteri Filppula, Dan Cleary, Damian Bruner, among others, all now need contracts for the coming year. Have you heard anything or just your thoughts on the overall feeling that these guys are going to be back with the Red Wings next year?
My guess is Filppula is not going to be back. I just think that the sides were too far apart, even going back to August and September negotiations. I heard he wanted, a deal for in excess of $5 million a year, and then he proceeded to have really his worst season, both in the regular season and the playoffs. I just think that both sides are ready to move on there, so I would be surprised if he came back. The other two, they'd like to re-sign both Cleary and Bruner. You know, Cleary's a heart and soul kind of player. He fills a variety of roles. He's very versatile. Bruner gives them what they needed this year, a shooter, especially a right-handed shot, a guy who could finish. But it really comes down to money, whether these guys think that they can. How much do they want to stay here compared to how much they think that they can get on in what is a fairly thin free agent market? So I'd say no to Filppula. I don't think he's coming back. The other two, I think my guess is Cleary comes back. Bruner is kind of up in the air right now. I would say 50-50.
Well, Hans, I really appreciate you doing this today, and thanks so much for filling us in on the latest on Pavel Datsyuk, and things will be busy for you throughout the offseason in Detroit, so we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, glad to be here.
Hans Serkan of MLive.com joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. Starting in 2014-2015, a new three-year contract extension for Pavel Datsyuk. 3 years, $22.5 million for an average annual value of $7.5 million per, so that ends up being more than his cap hit over the last contract. This current contract he's on right now enters its final season come July 5th. As we wrap things up on the program today, interesting text that comes in at 960-960 says, the night deal that the Calgary Flames made with the Florida Panthers makes a guy wonder if a guy like Johnny Gaudreau is playing their 4 years in college because he doesn't want to sign in Calgary. Now, we talked about this a number of months ago when Gaudreau decided to go back and play his junior year at Boston College. He obviously had an unbelievable freshman year, followed it up with a World Junior appearance, a gold medal, and a great sophomore year at BC, and decided to go back for his junior year. Flames were ready and willing to give him a contract, and Jay Feaster said that, you know what, they had it ready to go and were going to give him what they would give any college player, the max that they could give a college player. They were ready to go with a contract, but he decided to go back. And immediately people said, well, is he going to pull a Justin Schultz? Well, we see that Corbin Knight was, and pull a Justin Schultz, it makes it sound like it's a bad thing. Hey, players are within their rights. There's a loophole, and if you, as an independent contractor, want to go through the 4 years and say, hey, I want to write my own ticket, I would do the exact same thing. I can tell you 100% that if I was Corbin Knight or Justin Schultz and I knew that I was going to be highly sought after and maybe wasn't thrilled with the direction the team drafted me is going, I'd do the same thing. I don't sit here and say that Justin Schultz is a prima donna. I don't sit here and say Corbin Knight is a prima donna. They can do what they want. So Johnny Gaudreau is well within his rights to do the same thing. But I'm not quite ready to go in that direction with Gaudreau yet, because he still has another year before it even becomes a thing. Like, he's 2 years removed from his draft year. If he decides to go back for his senior season, then maybe I start to worry. But I think it's the right move for him to go back for his junior year. That said, I understand the consternation. I do. But I'm not really going to start to be worried about it until he decides to go back for his senior year. that happens, then maybe you can start to sweat a little bit more bullets, because then it really becomes more of a possibility, or then it really becomes more of a chance to happen. Still, from everything I've learned from the kid, and I've talked to him about 15 times since he's been drafted, he seems like he's pretty darn grateful to the Flames organization for being drafted here, and I think that he wants to be a part of the Flames organization. And let's not forget, Ben Hanowski was a guy who could have gone and done the same thing, and he decided to sign with the Flames organization. So, I don't know. Talk to me next summer if he decides to go back for his senior year. That's when we'll really start to worry maybe a little bit more when it comes to Johnny Gaudreau. Rob Kerr is on the small chair. I say that not to belittle his stature in the Calgary media market, but more because the chair that he's sitting on sunk, and he looks really small right now. Rob Kerr is in with us next. It's the Big Show, and it continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames in the winter, Jays in the summer. Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The most important draft in Calgary Flames history will go from Newark, New Jersey on June 30th.
The Flames have three picks in the first round in what experts are calling one of the deepest draft pools in over 10 years.
There are several top 30 lists. The experts have weighed in. Now it's our turn for the 2013 NHL Mock Draft. Boomer.